You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Mary redeemed a $50,000 cash prize playing Chumba Casino this year.
I was only playing for fun, so winning this was a dream come true.
Chumba Casino is America's number one social casino experience. It's serious fun. With over 80 casino-style games to choose from, you too could win life-changing amounts of cash. Be like Mary. Log on to ChumbaCasino.com and give them a whirl. That's ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void or prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. The voice in the preceding commercial was not the actual voice of a winner. Mary redeemed a $50,000 cash prize playing Chumba Casino this year.
I was only playing for fun, so winning this was a dream come true.
Chumba Casino is America's number one social casino experience. It's serious fun. With over 80 casino-style games to choose from, you too could win life-changing amounts of cash. Be like Mary. Log on to ChumbaCasino.com and give them a whirl. That's ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void or prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. The voice in the preceding commercial was not the actual voice of a winner.
From Autosport.com and Autosport Magazine, I'm Martin Lee, and this is the Autosport Podcast. This weekend, we're in Austria, and it's a sprint race weekend. So that means Friday, free practice, and sprint race qualifying today. Saturday sees free practice 2, and the 24-lap sprint race on the afternoon, 3:30 UK time, by the way. And then on Sunday, the feature race, not that we call it that, but qualifying was today, so we actually get to talk about the pole sitter, even though the winner of tomorrow goes through till Sunday. I'm sure you know that. Just recapping for anyone who doesn't. Max Verstappen snatched a late pole to beat Charles Leclerc to qualify first for the sprint race tomorrow. Well, Max has made the Red Bull Ring his home in recent seasons, but Ferrari look to have booked their place on the front row, the front spot on the grid in qualifying. Verstappen was down on his final run in the first half of the lap, but put in a stunning final sector to get what was looking like an unlikely pole. I'm joined to discuss today by the editor of Autosport.com, Hayden Cobb. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi, thanks for having me again. It's been, two in a week?
I know.
You'll be sick of the sound of me.
No, we can't get enough of you. By the way, if anyone is listening and you haven't listened to the review show of Silverstone and, you know, you like listening to Formula One stuff, then check out Hayden and Kevin. Two different names with myself, actually, on the Sunday show last week, mainly because I'd like to say, well, we're sharing the love, and mainly because everyone was either in the car or still stuck at the circuit. But we'd planned it. It wasn't last minute. We'd planned it. But it was nice. Nice to have different opinions as well,
yeah.
Actually.
It was an enjoyable one as well. It was a busy one.
Yes.
I highly recommend anyone who hasn't listened to it, go back, listen to it.
Kev doesn't hold back. He is, I wouldn't put him in the Max Verstappen fan club, and lots of people don't like that when he points out certain yes. things he doesn't like.
Yes.
So, and then people point that out to us. I mean, yes, we know, thank you. But Kev's the boss, and he has good opinions. Let's talk about today. The final segment of qualifying was stopped twice because of two separate crashes for the Mercedes pair of Lewis Hamilton and George Russell. The garage Lewis Hamilton's side particularly are going to have a very busy night and Saturday morning. The top three, though, of Verstappen, Leclerc and Sainz split by less than a tenth of a second. As we saw, Verstappen followed by Leclerc, 0.03 seconds. Carlos Sainz, 0.08. It really was the last 2.5 minutes, really, that all the action happened because of those two red flags. Let's start with Verstappen's performance today. And I was going to say over the weekend, but it is just today. It's really, these sprint race weekends really throw me. What are you making of Verstappen, who has, as I mentioned, dominated at this circuit in recent years?
Yeah, it does feel like today is a Saturday, but it's not. It is definitely a Friday if you're listening to this tonight. Max Verstappen's qualifying performance at Austria was very Max Verstappen-esque. We've seen, certainly the first part of this season, that Ferrari have got a particularly quick car over that single lap between Leclerc and Sainz. But Verstappen slowly but surely has been bridging that gap somewhat. There's been a few updates that have made the car more to his liking, and that's what we've sort of seen, this bit of progress, particularly more in the races than in qualifying spec. But this afternoon, it was definitely in his range, in his capability to just pull it that lap together, right, like you said, right at the end, because of the red flags. It was the all or nothing lap, and he put it together, scraped it. It was very, very close against both Ferraris, but he will be the one that starts the sprint from first place. And you've got to make him pretty much strong favourite for the rest of the weekend. But there's a long way to go, but I would put my money on him from here on out.
Yeah, really, really good performance today. And I've mentioned the top three. In fourth, almost half a second, gapping to Sainz in third, was Sergio Perez in the second Red Bull. But let's get into that in case any of our listeners caught some of the action earlier and, you know, turned off the TV coverage. As of recording this, many, many hours later, it's literally just landed. Checo Perez will start the sprint race from 13th on the grid because all of his Q3 lap times were deleted for a track limits breach in Q2. Hayden, can you unpick this one for us, please?
Yeah, so it's one of those unusual ones where the FIA takes a fair amount of time to come to a decision you think we could have seen in real time. So in short, there were three sections of the track that they were keeping a very strict track limits watch on. They had stationary cameras, people watching it, and anyone who went over the white lines on the edge of the track instantly got their lap times deleted. Now, I believe the section of the track, Turn 8, where Perez wasn't one of those areas. Therefore, they didn't have the instant confirmation that he had gone over the white lines. Therefore, his best lap in Q2 should have been deleted, which is why he had a post-qualifying investigation and he had a chat with the stewards. Indeed, he crossed the line at Turn 8 and was judged to have gained an advantage, and therefore he should have had that lap time deleted. Now, the problem, obviously, as we can see here, is because of that lap that should have been deleted, that was good enough for him to get into Q3, and therefore he contested Q3 and, as you say, put the car in fourth on the grid. So as the sort of a count-back effect, you could call it, Perez loses all his Q3 lap times because effectively he shouldn't have been there. And he also loses that lap from Q2 that was the lap that was at fault in this whole situation, which was obviously his best lap and got him into Q3. And that means technically he drops down to 13th. Hindsight, and if you can rewind time, says that poor Pierre Gasly, who finished 11th in Q2, therefore he was the one to miss out on the Q3 spot. He should have been in Q3 and Perez should have been out in Q2 finishing 13th. But They didn't have the information, they didn't have everything sorted to hand at that point in time, and that's why we're talking, hours after qualifying, about Perez dropping basically half a grid spot and everyone in that gap going up a place. It does sound confusing, it does sound sort of, you could say, peak F1 overcomplicating it, but there is a sort of a reason behind it in terms of where they were looking for the track limits, and unfortunately an area that they weren't looking at for that instant sort of lap time deletion whilst Q qualifying is going on is where Perez fell foul. So Yes, it's one of those unfortunate ones. I wouldn't say I'm sort of defending the rulemakers or how they came to their decision, but they sort of didn't have the full facts at the time, therefore had to do it after qualifying, and that's why we're in this situation. But yeah, as you say, the bottom line is Perez will start the sprint, so not the full Grand Prix on Sunday, but the sprint race from 13th, and everyone in between that gap goes up a spot. But of course, like you say, if he gains paces in the sprint race, he could end up back in fourth for the Grand Prix, which would be the massive irony if something like that were to happen, yes. Which isn't too far off the world's a possibility, yes. Given the pace he's got in that car.
Yeah, and the car looks great. I have the FIA bulletin here. Thank you for sending that on. It says, the team made the point that they took both risk and expended resources to compete in Q3. The stewards accept this point. However, in assessing a penalty after a session, this is no different than any other situation. The usual penalty in deleting the lap time concerned, and the stewards order the same penalty here. However, as a consequence, the driver would not have proceeded into Q3, and therefore, in fairness to the other competitors, the stewards order that all lap times for Q3 for the driver are also deleted. So that is their, in their own words, their logic. We've seen this over the years in Formula One. You get that time between Q1 and Q2 or Q2, Q3, they have a look at it. And if they can't identify it, then hard luck, right? Over the years, it's been like, well, that's obviously not fair. That person was blocked or impeded. And if it's not resolved in that gap and that driver isn't given the penalty and then they contest that session, we've seen it time and time again. You just get lucky or you get unlucky in Formula One. Whereas this is one of the first times I can remember where they've gone back and gone, no. We're inventing our own time machine to put things how we think they should be, which I agree with you is peak F1. Like, it's a little bit weird and it doesn't do a huge amount for the fans when they turn on their TV on Saturday.
That is the ultimate.
And it's like
crux of it, like you say, the fans that are watching on television, the fans that are there at the track, would have gone home or whatever, believing that Perez was fourth. Now, okay, Perez being fourth is not exactly a headline fact, but it's very easy and very simple to say the pole sitter could have been in this situation, whoever that may have been, and that just changes the whole story when it's quite easy to avoid, and that's the sort of problem that they keep finding themselves in. But on the other hand, rules are rules, and they did apply them as accurately as they could.
Okay. George Russell lines up fourth in the Mercedes because he put in a good time before shunting, followed by Esteban Ocon in the first of the Alpines, and a brilliant result for the two Haas drivers lining up now in sixth and seventh. I'm doing some very quick mental arithmetic on my notes that I'd written. And Magnussen pipping Schumacher, but that's stunning. We'll talk about that in a minute. Fernando Alonso, second Alpine in eighth, followed by Lewis Hamilton, who was bottom of Q3 but gets bumped up, and Pierre Gasly is in 10th, followed by Albon, Bottas, Perez in 13th, Tsunoda and Lando, who at one point was running 8th early on in qualifying and had a shocker, along with teammate Ricciardo in 16th. Stroll, Zhou, Latifi, Vettel lines up last, again track limits catching out Sebastian Vettel. Where should we go next? Let's talk about the Mercedes crashes. Two separate incidents wiping out Russell and Hamilton. Like I say, Russell had a good time on the board, so starting up on the second row, which is brilliant. We should talk about, first of all, Hamilton brought out the red flags. About 5.5 minutes to go. He ran into the barrier at, was it turn 7?
Turn 7.
Talk us through this.
Yes, so a very uncharacteristic error, you could say, from Hamilton. He did say, sort of after qualifying, he partly held his hands up, but also wasn't really sure what happened. He sort of lost the rear of the car going through the sort of the high speed corner, and it is one of those where as soon as you lose it, well, you're on a one way ticket to hit in the barriers. And I remember not so many years ago, Bottas did it in a Mercedes in a very similar situation. So it's not impossible to do. Many will do it after and since. But I think just it'd be interesting to see what the Mercedes sort of divulged and how they analyse their qualifying, because naturally their drivers will push harder in Q3. They seem to believe, and to be fair, the pace in practice did show it, that they, if they completed their laps and didn't sort of have the issues that they came into in Q3, they would have been there or thereabouts, knocking on the door of the top three. And I think that's basically what they were going for. The car is inherently a bit twitchy, a bit nervous. And we've seen this, whether it's the porpoising in the corners that unsettled the drivers, or if it was just a gust of wind catching the car and putting them out. But they were pushing and on the limit, as you would expect in Q3, because of qualifying, because that's the time you do it of the entire weekend. But they seem to find that edge where when you go over it, well, that's the consequence of it. Whereas I think you could say, because they have the faster package, they have to take ever so slightly less risk in terms of if you were the Red Bull or the Ferrari drivers. So a combination of errors and issues, I think, have hit both Mercedes drivers. And it's very rare to see that, to be honest. Yeah. But that was it. Similar sorts of crashes, similar sorts of situations for both Hamilton and Russell. And like you say, if anything, Russell got slightly lucky, you could say, because, yeah, as you say, he got a lap time in that was good enough for fifth anyway, and he was basically going on his final run in Q3, and with Perez's penalty, it's put him fourth. Now, that's probably where he would have ended up anyway, so he hasn't really lost much. Hamilton, on the other hand, has. He never got a clean lap in. Like, he lost his first efforts through track limits and a mistake going round the back stretch of it, of the track. And therefore, when he crashed, he just didn't have a time that was going to be competitive in the top 10. So tumbled down the order and obviously now starts ninth. So yeah. He's got a bit of work to do. He's got, yeah, like you say, both the Alpines and both the Haases in front of him. And he's in the faster car. But with the format again this weekend, he's got effectively 24 extra laps to get ahead of them if you count the sprint plus the Grand Prix. We saw what he was capable of in Brazil in a similar sort of circumstance of being further back. So I wouldn't say it's all over for them. Plenty can happen. But
depending on reliability, a possible podium for one of the Mercedes. I mean, reliability in front of them, obviously, the two Ferraris, which is, at the minute, you don't know they're going to get to the end of the races. But yeah, so it was, as you say, in Q2, Hamilton was on a 105.4. When it's not turned up. Now, Max Verstappen, the only driver in the 104s this weekend in Q3, but, you know, if it had been turned up, if Mercedes had gone for it in Q3, it could have been a top three position. So
Mary redeemed a $50,000 cash prize playing Chumba Casino this year.
I was only playing for fun, so winning this was a dream come true.
Chumba Casino is America's number one social casino experience. It's serious fun. With over 80 casino-style games to choose from, you too could win life-changing amounts of cash. Be like Mary. Log on to ChumbaCasino.com and give them a whirl. That's ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void or prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. The voice in the preceding commercial was not the actual voice of a winner.
But George Russell will lead the Mercedes fight. Hey, talk to us about the two Haas drivers lining up sixth and seventh after Silverstone, where I know Schumacher took some stick, I think, afterwards for not being more aggressive with... And we talked about it on the review podcast, and actually, Kevin, our boss Kev said that he thought Verstappen was over the limit in terms of shutting the door at fast corners and not leaving a... when Mick Schumacher was... No, if didn't have half a car up, he was certainly up the inside, which is funny. But look, Schumacher banked the points, and that's a huge boost for Haas. And then today, what an amazing result.
Yes, I think Haas have this capability of, they know they've got a quick car, and okay, they haven't done any upgrades on it, but they are developing it with what they've got to make it an even quicker car. And that's never doubted. We've seen it when the track suits their package. Sort of thinking Bahrain and to be fair, Silverstone just gone, they can pull out results. And this was always a track, even before the rule changes, where Haas was strong. So I think it was sort of in line with expectations, and obviously situations have played in their favour, that both drivers have delivered, and with probably, they've probably out-qualified Alonso as well. So they're even higher than probably where they expected to be. So... yeah, full credit to both drivers. I think Schumacher, perhaps, that, like you say, that yes, he sort of had to bail a little bit out of the Verstappen duel, but his priority on that front was to bank those first F1 points of his career. And perhaps he's thinking now, like, right, I've got myself established. I am a point scorer in Formula 1. now I feel sort of planted, a bit more confidence in his car and on his side of the garage. And yeah, you think if Haas can sort of convert that in the sprint and indeed the Grand Prix, again, they're going to bank a good chunk of points and sort of be that midfield team that can take the fight to the others when the opportunity is there.
And that midfield is so tight and all over the place. Again, is trying to find some form, really difficult. But the Alpines are discovering a bit more consistency now in recent races. So Ocon lining up fifth ahead of Alonso in eighth. And AlphaTauri with Pierre Gasly, so very, very unlucky because he was the one knocked out in Q2 with Perez, etc., lining up 10th. And Tsunoda in 14th. But again, the AlphaTauris on a good weekend, definitely ones to watch. Alexander Albon lines up 11th for Williams. And first of all, good to see full recovery and that car doing well here. And, you know, it's such a good circuit to watch Formula One cars on as well. It's got elevation, it's got different types of corners, and it's great to see the order, the midfield, completely unpredictable. The two McLarens, for instance, this is the effect of having a sprint race weekend, having a shocker, a free practice one. Daniel Ricciardo in and out of the pits. They're putting gurney flaps on his rear wing to try and get some stability on that. And Lando Norris not getting any decent running in because of a smoky bottom. And you're like, oh, man, and then you're into qualifying. And then you're into sprint race qualifying. And Lando looked like he could get a decent time. I mean, he just eclipsed Ricciardo this weekend, but he couldn't string that lap together. Talk us through your impressions of McLaren.
It's been a bit of a nightmare day, you could say, for McLaren. Like you say, for a variety of reasons. You start in practice. Yeah, Norris has this sort of complaining of a hot / smoky rear end, but quite literally from coming from his cockpit. So he hops out. There, he just had a new engine and various other components installed for this weekend. In his McLaren, and they've had to revert to an older spec, a power unit and engines that's done more mileage to make sure that the new one isn't totally broken. So therefore, down on power, down on generally performance. And then during qualifying, he complained of a brake issue. They wasn't sure if it was a hydraulics issue, or he just said the pedal was going flat to the floor, so he didn't have any confidence under braking. And yeah, it's sort of what you need around Austria in particular, with the long straights and then sort of heavy braking zones into the slow corners. So just ultimately the combination of factors of he just couldn't get the lap together with the car that he currently has. And it's sort of even worse for Daniel Ricciardo, because he didn't necessarily have any of these issues, but he just cannot get on top of this McLaren F1 car. And added to the fact that its general performance isn't quite there this weekend, with the likes of, as we mentioned earlier, Haas, Alpine in particular, and probably AlphaTauri in that mix as well. Yeah, it just means that, like you say, with the such fine margins, it's very quickly that they can tumble backwards. Again, they could have a sort of a blessing in disguise of it's the sprint weekend. Therefore, particularly Norris, if they can sort his car out, he's got more opportunity to climb the order. But it's going to be a tall order for the team overall. It's not looking great for them, at least on a Friday night. But we'll sort of see where it goes from there, to be honest, because it can't get any worse.
It can't get any worse, especially after Ricciardo at Silverstone. It can't get any worse than that for that team and that driver, and both drivers as well. We'll see what they can do in the race. And just looking down. Oh, and then the Aston Martins again hit by track limit. So at one point, Sebastian Vettel was running ahead of Lance Stroll, but Vettel will start up last, start the race last, sprint race last, 20th on the grid, behind Nicholas Latifi and Joe, and then Stroll in 17th, because again, track limits and deletions. Let me just finish off today by just getting your opinion on this, because I think our listeners will have their own opinion, and I've got mine as well, but I'd like to hear yours on this. Track limits and the potential of not ruining the spectacle, but we want teams to play fair, to play by the same rules, and the white line defines the track. If it was a street circuit, you'd be in the wall, which is fine. So there's no arguing with that. And when there's runoff or gravel or grass, drivers take different risks, which is fine. But clearly, and I've never been to Biggin Hill to watch the broadcast happening, but clearly the TV providers at FOM are able to have plenty of people listening to all the onboards. When they hear something good, chop it up, edit it, beep it where it's necessary, and tell the director, hey, we've got this. I don't know how how that works with the stewards and the FIA, but it's not hard to employ 20 people, if you're the FIA, to sit there and just watch the onboard. And then when it clearly, or even might be, and they might do this already, but what's your take on this massively high-tech sport that we all love, announcing decisions hours and hours afterwards when it should be so clear-cut? It's not hard just to be watching the onboard of a car constantly and be like, oh, I think that was out. I'll just refer that upwards or to the boss or to the review team.
Yeah,
I don't know. Like, that must happen already. And I can't think that it wouldn't. You only got to have like a staff of an extra 20 people. They must do it already. So
it's funny that you mention it, because it was only very recently when Autosport was running the In Defence Of series, where you defend something controversial. One of my ones was In Defence Of Track Limits. And basically, to summarise what I'd sort of discovered and found out, is it's a black and white issue, but the way to get to that is not black and white. There are so many layers of areas of grey matter that you have to sort of work your way through. The Red Bull Ring is a classic example of this, where there's places F1 cars or single-seater cars in general will go over the track limits over and over again, because there's that inch of runoff, or there's indeed a decent bit of tarmac. They will inherently be able to find advantage by going half a car width off the track, but because you're still in track limits that are defined, that's where you get your advantage. Now, like you say, Monaco, for example, you can't do that anywhere, so it's not necessarily an issue at all. So it does come down to circuit specifics, corner specifics, context as well. MotoGP bike racing also uses places like the Red Bull Ring, therefore their needs on curbs and runoff areas is needed for safety. So it's something inevitable there, i.e. they can't make them like cliffs, so therefore you can't penalise the cars as much because they can ride over these curves much easier. So the problem is difficult to nail down, but I do agree with the, in terms of when you're going through qualifying, you know where people are going to push the limits. They were looking at three places in particular, I believe, turn one, turn 9 and 10, and turn six. People can get angry at me if I get these wrong. That's the areas they were looking at for qualifying, to where people were gaining advantages by going off the track and instantly deleting laps if they're looking at it. There's only 10 corners at the Red Bull Ring. Arguably, that you need 10 camera angles that will give you that view per corner, like that each corner, sorry, to then know instantly where people are taking track limits. That only doing four when you know there's other areas where people can take advantage just seems like you've set yourself up for failure, and this is sort of what's happened here. So it can be solved, it can be made black and white. You just need to have the right planning and preparation in place, and I do feel, whether it's a combination of the FIA and the TV production crew not working close enough together or not getting the right equipment, but they are missing key areas, and this is what's caused this issue with Perez losing his lap times and going from 4th to 13th. So it can be solved, and there probably needs to be a bit more of a fairer assessment of it and look at it next time and go, right, track every corner. Even if you think this person there'll be no track limit problems here, it's surprising how much drivers will push and where they'll end up to try and find that tenth of a second, that thousandth of a second, because that's what it comes down to.
Yeah.
So it's not easy, but it is doable. And I think that's where we need a bit more common sense thinking and a bit more planning just to get it nailed on, because it can be done. We've seen it at other tracks. It can be sort of marshalled and looked after very, very cleanly. It can be brutal, and ultimately that would have been a bit of drama, a little bit of, oh, the rule makers get in the way, but it would have been right to say, right, Perez, you've lost your last lap in Q2. Off you go. You've got no chance to respond. Gasly's in Q3. bit of drama, bit of controversy, but that's rules are rules. That would have been it, and we move on.
It's not like other sports where you can pause and do, you know, the another umpire. You can't pause this sport. It's going until the, you know, between the two qualifying or three qualifying sections. But, you know, where timing beams are down to the thousandth of the second. I mean, we had the top three today within a tenth of a second with so much accuracy in some places. It just, I don't know what the answer is because I'm not an engineer or clever enough to think it through, but there must be something that can be automated. I mean, I don't know if you put time, you know, some sort of something on every white line of every track. That seems excessive. But as you say, 8 or 10 cameras, slow motion cameras, you know, on top of the broadcast stuff, it's an expense, I get it, but surely Formula One can afford it. But anyway, right, there you go. I think people know my opinion of the matter. I think it's all very, very frustrating and silly for the fans. You know, if it's going to take hours to work out, and a lot of new fans coming into the sport as well, it's just a head scratcher. But let's not let that put us off a brilliant weekend, a fantastic track. Once again, Max Verstappen on fire. I can't wait to watch this one. There's F2, there's F3, there's Super Cup action. There's loads going on. And according to our team, the best food for F1 journalists of the entire year, they say, at the Red Bull Ring.
It's
the best restaurant.
The media get the best looked after, you could say, from a view, from access, from food, from a little bit of everything. If any listeners are into Sky Sports F1's Ted Kravitz's notebook, he did a post-qualifying notebook there, and he shared a lift from the media centre whilst he was broadcasting live with our very own Jonathan Noble.
Okay,
he looked a bit awkward, but it's a good watch. And he's they were talking about how the qualifying went, and he was in this lift, and it was all typical Ted's style. So our colleague gave us a shout out as well to say what he was up to, and no, it's very good. But
great,
yes. Going back to the point is, it's for the media. For to be fair, I've never been to the Red Bull Ring as a fan, but the Orange Army certainly make it look like a spectacle and a bit of a festival atmosphere, similar to sort of what Silverstone's had, but obviously a bit more European in feel. The one thing that did sour the taste, which is more of an ongoing thing, is the cheering of when Lewis Hamilton crashed by the Max Verstappen fans. It's a difficult matter because I understand the upset and it's part and parcel of the drama and a bit of the soap opera. And indeed, it's a million times worse in other sports, football in particular. But it just is a bit unsavoury. It's a bit like, he's already out. You don't need to like celebrate because of these previous rivalries. Like,
I know what you mean. It's where football, it's where Formula One becomes more football than more rugby. And you know, rugby has intense rivalries, but at the final whistle, you go for a beer together, and all the fans of either side will talk about how your teams did, and everyone's friends, and everyone is twice as drunk as at football, and everyone's still friends.
Yeah,
and yet in football, just because of no reason, you utterly hate the person standing next to you because they choose to support a team. And I say it's when Formula One's like that that I've got less time for it. I mean, I know, was it on who? It was Codders. It was Codders last week when we were at Silverstone. We're doing the live podcasts from the GP Racing Fan Village. Described it as a bit of panto. You know when the Silverstone fans.
It was very panto.
And I'm like, I don't know if I want F1 to be so panto, but I guess, you know, I don't know.
The concern, and I think perhaps to make it a bit more serious, the concern would be is, if Hamilton, say, had a bigger accident and was injured, and then you've got fans cheering because he's crashed, that is, that's just poor. Like, you didn't, not that you'd need to, but you wouldn't see anybody cheering that Zhou crashed at the start of the British Grand Prix.
No, but remember last year when Hamilton and Verstappen came together at Silverstone, as Verstappen went through the gravel and hit, and had that massive G impact. If you watch some of the kind of the Twitter videos or the videos that people posted after the event from their own cameras, the crowd, the Silverstone crowd, were like, "Way!" hey! Ooh! Like, when he went off, there was a big cheer, and then a millisecond later when he hit, everyone, ooh, that was nasty. And like, but the instant reaction was to cheer Verstappen getting, you know, knocked off. So, like, the Brit fans did that, and you can't get
away.
And but then they went, that's horrible! But still.
It is both sides. This isn't a, British media
Verstappen
which
we get
fans.
Told all the time that we're anti-Verstappen. It couldn't be further from the truth.
And
but
it
there
definitely,
we go.
If it goes the other way around, which, to be fair, we did see a bit of it, like you say, Codders mentioned it about Silverstone and Verstappen getting booed or whatever like this. Like, it does happen both ways and in lots of places. But I think, when it gets a bit more serious, that's when it sort of starts crossing the line. Like, the panto and the soap opera thing is one element, but... if sort of danger and injury starts coming into it and they're still doing that, that's really bad.
Dear listener, let us know your thoughts. You can email podcast@autosport.com. That is, you can send us an email or a social media stuff, but if you want to email podcast@autosport.com with your thoughts on any of the things that we've talked about today, we can bring up your email, or if you don't want us to share it, we can just send us an email and say, don't share this on the air, but we'll be back. I won't be, and Hayden won't be, but Luke and Matt Q will be from the circuit tomorrow for Sprint Race Reaction and Review. I'll be back on Sunday. We got Megan there, which is brilliant. So she'll join us again on Sunday night alongside Luke Smith. And I think it is, Jess McFadden. And it's Alex Kalanorkas back in.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kid's PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
The UK this week to join us on Sunday. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll be back soon.
Mary redeemed a $50,000 cash prize playing Chumba Casino this year.
I was only playing for fun, so winning this was a dream come true.
Chumba Casino is America's number one social casino experience. It's serious fun. With over 80 casino-style games to choose from, you too could win life-changing amounts of cash. Be like Mary. Log on to ChumbaCasino.com and give them a whirl. That's ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void or prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. The voice in the preceding commercial was not the actual voice of a winner.
Bread aisle, are you ready to rock? Dave's Killer Bread is the country's number one organic bread for a reason. Always delivering killer taste, killer texture, and killer nutrition. This isn't bread, this is bread amplified.
Sports Social Podcast Network.